Welcome to Keeping It Green, a podcast for ornamental plant professionals and enthusiasts, with hosts Margaret Pickoff and Tim Abbey.
Hello, and welcome to Keeping It Green, a podcast from Penn State Extension for ornamental plant professionals and enthusiasts. I'm one of your hosts, Margaret Pickoff. I'm a horticulture educator with Penn State Extension, and on each episode, I'm joined by my colleagues on the green industry team as co-hosts. On today's episode, my co-host is Tim Abbey. Hello, Tim.
Hi, Margaret. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too. On today's episode, we will be joined by Jennifer Schaefer from the NOFA Organic Land Care Program. But before we get to our interview with Jennifer, we'll start out with our check-in about what we're seeing, what we're doing out in the field or in our day-to-day work as extension educators. So, Tim, what are you up to these days?
I spent Wednesday and Thursday down in Maryland attending a University of Maryland biocontrol conference, which was very informative. It was also a good time to meet or see some people from some neighboring states that, you know, kind of work colleagues, but at different institutions. And we had a couple of our other like Penn State Hort people were down there too. So that was very good. And a couple of things this week, but nothing exciting or unusual, mostly invasive plant stuff this week.
Oh, interesting. Cool. Yeah. I saw something about that biocontrol conference because I religiously read the University of Maryland IPM updates that come out every Friday. Yeah. I find them so helpful. And because they're just south of us, it's kind of like a little prediction of what's coming our way.
Yeah. And I've got an affinity to Maryland Extension because I went to grad school at the University of Maryland. So there's still some people there that are hanging on from when my time down there back in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, that's great. Cool. Yeah, it's a nice time for professional development. I had the good fortune to go to a plant research conference at Morris Arboretum last week. Similarly, yeah, just great to sit. And, you know, we focus so much on teaching and coordinating programs and creating education and delivering education that it is really nice to sit and just learn for a day and get to be with your colleagues and kind of nerd out about plant stuff.
You're never too old to learn things.
No.
The problem, I think, as you get older, is like retaining the information becomes more problematic. So that's my issue now.
Yeah. Well, that's where those handwritten notes come in.
Exactly.
They never fail. Great. Well, so nice to see you, Tim. I'm glad that we're doing this podcast together. And let's welcome on our guest for today, Jennifer Schaefer, who is the Organic Land Care Program Director for the NOFA Organic Land Care Program. So welcome, Jennifer. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you, Margaret and Tim. Thanks very much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you for joining us.
So just to get started, can you describe your role as the director of the Organic Land Care Program?
Sure. Well, you know, my long title kind of says it all. The Organic Land Care Program is run out of the Connecticut Northeast Organic Farming Association, Connecticut NOFA. I run the program, which is serving primarily professionals in the landscape industry. So I kind of do soup to nuts. We're a very lean organization. We don't have a big staff, but I work really closely with the Connecticut NOFA staff to bring the programming to our members.
Great. And just to kind of share with our audience, can you talk about the origin of the Organic Land Care Program? Because obviously, NOFA is an organization focused on farming and food production, and this is kind of a different topic or set of topics and range of clients maybe that you're working with.
Yeah, absolutely. The mission of the Organic Land Care Program is to bring the principles and practices of organic farming to the landscapes where many of us live our lives. That was the initial goal and continues to be the ongoing focus of our programming, which is why we're housed at NOFA. The program was started in the late 1990s, about 1999, 2000. By a group of people from the combined NOFAs, NOFA Mass, Connecticut NOFA in particular. And those folks really worked to establish a set of standards, which are still our a core of our programming, the standards for organic land care. And those standards form the basis of our training and accreditation program. And so we run the only accreditation program for organic land care that is recognized by an international standard. So that the standards themselves are IFOAM certified. And so that IFOAM is a really unique, it's a unique part of what our program offers. So the history of the program, it's really been sort of working to educate land care providers on organic practices, to set standards, and also to bring some information and education to homeowners, although that's really not the core of our programming. It's obviously ancillary to everything that we do.
And there are no, to my knowledge, there's still no like US federal like organic land care standards. So I think that's what's still very unique about the NOFA program and kind of the one that I go to if there's anybody who has any interest in this because you've been doing it so much longer. I know it's been adopted in some other states or, you know, tweaking it or, you know, kind of doing their own version of it, but to me, it's still the first and best one.
Well, thanks for saying that. We think so too. It is, you know, it is really interesting, and that's a great point because that was really the genesis of the program. Because there are no regulations around how the word organic is used in land care, the founders of the program, the initial committee, really felt like it was important to set some standards that people could refer to and have a common understanding of what was being practiced when someone was offering organic land care. Yeah, to me, it's really interesting because I think they were in many ways way ahead of the times. Now, I think it's much more common for homeowners and for land care providers to be thinking about ecological, sustainable, organic, low impact practices, but you know, 25 years ago, that wasn't really where the industry was at all. And it certainly wasn't in the kind of common sense parlance of homeowners. So, creating that understanding of what it means to do organic land care was really important and continues to be a really important part of what we do.
Do you have a good feel for the geographic reach of people who've gone through the accreditation course? Like, or is there parts of the country where you know you have more people who have you know gone through and you know passed the exam? I mean, I'm going to guess that's probably most of them are still in New England, but you know I know it's spread since then. Like, you know, there's been courses here in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that actually raises two points, Tim. One is that I didn't describe the accreditation program very, very carefully, and that is really the core of what we do. So we train professionals and we accredit them, and they continue once they take the training and pass the test. We consider that sort of the jumping off point for engaging with organic land care. And after that, they continue to engage with land care and remain accredited by, you know, by staying engaged with the Organic Land Care Program, paying an annual fee, which supports the ongoing program, commit to doing continuing education around organic land care, and what's the third thing? Oh, and also, obviously, continue to commit to follow the standards when they are offering and providing organic land care to people. And while the NOFAs and Connecticut NOFA are based in the Northeast, the program is really national. We have a really big base in the Northeast. We have a growing base in the Southeast. It's really interesting. We've had a lot of new people from Maryland and North Carolina area. We have a pretty good group in the Midwest, some in even Texas, California, Oregon. So there's really a broad spread. We talked before we started recording briefly about the Phipps Conservatory, which I think almost 10 years ago now, worked with the Organic Land Care Program to develop their own sustainable land care training program, which they focus really locally in Pittsburgh. And they work in close partnership with us in developing that program. So they have a core of landscapers in the Pittsburgh area that are certified through Phipps, but they have a sort of cross accreditation with us. And we have a newer partner actually in Hawaii, the Maui Nui Marine Resource Council, which just graduated their first class of reef-friendly landscapers based on our program. And that's a really exciting development for us.
Yeah, that's cool. Have you been able to do a business trip out to Hawaii and make sure they're following all the practices right?
Gosh, wouldn't I love to do that? I, you know,
Oh.
we did sort of joke about it, and our Connecticut NOFA's executive director, Jeremy Pelletier, who was the program director before me, is actually from Hawaii. So we have talked about the possibility of that, but boy, that would be so fun.
So I'm curious, the basis for this program is kind of this the NOFA standards for organic land care, which is an actual guide, and I think has been updated many times since the original version in the late 90s. I'm curious, and I realize that you may not have been part of the organization at the when this guide was being written, but I'm curious kind of if you know anything about what that process was like of kind of translating the basis of organic agriculture, which, you know, focuses on soil health and not using synthetic pesticides and not using genetically modified organisms. And what was it like to kind of translate that from the world of crop production into land care?
That's a great question. The initial committee was comprised of scientists, land care practitioners, concerned citizens, and they really tried to strike a balance, and farmers, organic farmers. And so they really tried to strike a balance between the science and the practice of it. And the way Mike Nadeau tells it, they basically would sit down in a room for 4 days and just hash things out. I don't know what the initial brief was, and I actually haven't seen that very initial set of standards, and they have expanded and developed over the years. But the goal was really to create a set of action-oriented standards. The standards are developed sort of along the lines of the National Organic Program, where we have preferred, allowed, and prohibited practices. So each section, there might be a section on soil health, for example, and there will be a set of principles to begin the section, and then a set of practices that are preferred, allowed, and prohibited. And so it allows people to sort of phase in. We understand that not everybody can, you know, achieve perfection or perfectly organic practice in every setting and in every landscape, especially, you know, because landscapers are not working generally in one space. They're working in many, many spaces over time, over which they don't always have full control. So that model of the preferred, allowed, and prohibited practices and the set of principles around it allows people to use the standards to address even issues that aren't covered in the standards, because you can't cover every single area of land care practice in even in the 60-page document that we have here. And so it's a kind of continuously evolving document and set of standards, and we're actually due an update this year. We're just getting started thinking about what that next update is going to look like. The last one was in 2017. Before then, they had been updated really every 3 to 4 years, so we're actually overdue. The pandemic kind of threw time frames off for a lot of things for a lot of people.
Can you go over kind of briefly like the format of like when you do the in-person trainings to get people accredited, kind of how that is that plays out over the course of those days?
So the in-person trainings stopped before I became involved with the Organic Land Care Program, because we transitioned to online trainings at the beginning of that pandemic. What I know about how they work is that it would be a 4-day format and mostly classroom time, hopefully one or two field visits, and then a test at the end. And you'd cover all of the areas of soil health, site analysis and design, lawn and turf care. There's a section on business practice. And each module would be taught by an expert in their field, generally practitioners, often scientists as well. And it's a and it would be, somewhere between 25 and 50 people would be the number of participants in each course.
Yeah, I think I'll probably always think of it as being like an in-person thing because the years I was in Connecticut, once that program got rolling for the in-person thing, and then even a couple of times when you were holding trainings down here in Pennsylvania, I would come in and do a session on, I think I did like the woody plants, pest management session. So I don't know if I was really an expert, but I was there and available and willing to assist. So it was, because I would sit in on some other days and it was a very intense, they were long days.
It is. I think that format is very intensive training. It works for people who are already working, right? And that was one of the reasons for that model, is because it's just, that chunk of time is sometimes easier for people to give a number of days in a row where they can really focus on it, rather than trying to do a course while you're out in the field every day doing your landscape business. So I think that that's a really good model. We'd love to do some more in-person trainings again and in-person courses. The model that we're using right now is really focusing on online asynchronous learning. And that has, well, it doesn't give the same access to a group and that sort of sense of a community. I've heard from a lot of students that they like it because they can watch the videos and do the learning and then come to an in-person meeting with an instructor with all that background learning and questions, and they can do it over a longer period of time. And of course, we can increase our geographic reach. Because we can, and we can reach people in all parts of the country at any given time. So right now we have scheduled an August course, a November course, and then another February course. That tends to be the format, is sort of February, August, November for the online learning, and those tend to run for about 6 weeks. And within those 6 weeks, people can do all of their learning at their own pace. But we're always trying to put together one, to put together at least one in-person course.
And I just got to follow up with that. So once somebody goes through the course, passes the exam, how do they keep up like the accreditation, like getting their CEUs, like stuff that like Margaret and I do here in Pennsylvania. Like if we're holding an educational program and we want to get like pesticide recertification credits for license holders, we have to submit a program to like the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture. They got to sign off on it, and then it comes back to us. How does that work for this program?
For this program, we're a little looser, because just because of the nature of the program, and we understand that our members come from and participate in so many different aspects of land care, that we really approach the continuing education fairly broadly. So for courses that people are taking, they can do online classes. They can do in-person classes. It should be focused on increasing their knowledge in some area of organic land care. So maybe someone who primarily does lawns wants to learn more about native plants. And so maybe they take a pretty basic native plant class. Someone who is a planting designer isn't going to do a basic native plant course necessarily for their continuing education, but maybe they'll do a lawn remediation or lawn replacement course. So we have a lot of sort of fellow travelers in this space who offer really wonderful continuing education. Mount Cuba Center, New Directions in the American Landscape is another really good one. The Ecological Landscape Alliance runs really great courses. People often do courses through their local botanical garden. Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens is one. And we also, our program has traditionally offered advanced workshops for practitioners. And that is part of the model that the workshops that we offer are free and open to our AOLCPs, our accredited organic land care professionals. That is part of the program that kind of waned a little bit over the pandemic years, and we're building back up now. So we have, I'm in the process of developing a new suite of advanced workshops, which will be available to our folks from probably fall through next spring, that I'm really excited about.
Do any of the accredited professionals have kind of split businesses where they have a more conventional landscaping business and then an organic option? And is that something that is, is that a common sort of business setup? Is it something that your program frowns upon, or, would you prefer that everyone offer who's accredited just offer organic practices, or, is that pretty common for businesses to have both offerings for their clients based on what the clients are requesting?
Well, I would say all of the above to that. Yes, many, many, many of the businesses, many of, so to take one step back, the accreditation is, it follows the individual. So we don't accredit businesses, we accredit individuals, and we allow our accredited individuals to advertise their business, either businesses that are they're owned or run or primarily staffed by accredited individuals. And those folks can be on our organic land care guide and map and have access to all of our services. Many, many of them are split businesses. The standards actually has a really nice outline and a pretty clear description of what the guidelines are if you are offering organic and non-organic services, and what sort of fits under the standards as organic services, and how to operate that split business. In large part, we believe fully and completely that any landscape can be managed organically. But we also understand that the industry is slow to change, and especially 25 years ago, it would have been unrealistic to expect people to dive into this kind of training and this kind of work and expect them to never, ever, to only practice organic land care. It would have been really limiting. There are an equal number of people in our network who do only organic land care, or have shifted from a split business to only organic land care.
Because I know there is at least among like resources offered by Extension that focus on organic farmers, there is often support for farmers who are in the transition period between conventional and organic. And that strikes me as kind of like if you weren't totally like fully convinced by the organic program, either that, your staff could pull it off, or that your customers would be happy with it, that kind of starting off with a split offering. And then, you're always gonna have folks who want the kind of country club golf course look for their lawns and things like that. And so, yeah, I was just curious if the flexibility was there, and it sounds like it is.
It is for sure. And the other difference with the way we think about our program is we're not certifying businesses and we're not certifying landscapes, right? And so it is the set of practices that are people that people are using that we're really kind of moderating, I guess. And what I feel like I've been finding in the time that I've been here is a lot of the new people coming in are either starting their own businesses or transitioning out of conventional land care, have never been in conventional land care. A lot of younger people are coming to this without that experience of a more conventional landscape industry background, which is wonderful because then you don't have to unlearn all of these habits, and you go in with the notion that that the most normal thing to do is organic, non-pesticide use, low emissions land care, which is really what the goal is. I think in the next set of standards, one of the things I'd really like to accomplish is to maybe identify a little bit that shift and the movement from 25 years ago. Where were we then? Where are we now? What is the next step and the next stage in the development of this kind of work?
And I think the standards are written in a way where you accommodate some conventional things. Like if there's emergency treatments that need to be done for certain pest issues because they're potentially like plant killing pests. It's not so stringent that you can't use that. It just has to be a definitely justifiable reason to kind of go outside of what are the preferred practices.
Yeah, that's a great point. The emergency organic rescue treatment is a very specific thing in the standards. And for anybody who's out there who's thinking about taking the accreditation test and course, this is a question that we ask on the test all the time. Describe an emergency organic rescue treatment. When would you use it? How would you use it? What are the conditions under which one would use it? And one of the most important aspects of that is that it's not an ongoing chronic use of a chemical or a non-organic practice, that it's delimited. It is important because the thing that's being treated, either a landscape or a landscape element, has cultural or economic significance, or aesthetic significance, and so that non-organic treatment that is defined in scope and time is actually a part of an organic practice, but only when it's delimited by these conditions.
Yeah, I think that probably I'm gonna make an assumption, but for some of like the invasive pests, the exotic things that kind of come through into a geographic area and just wreak havoc as they tear through, like emerald ash borer,
Exactly.
like oak wilt is becoming a problem in Pennsylvania, and things like
Mm-hmm.
that, where over time they've discovered some beneficial insects that will go after adult, like emerald ash borers, but they've never been able to bring the population down to completely protect an ash tree. So you often do have to intervene with, a synthetic product. So I think that's something that, listeners who weren't familiar with this need to take away, that, the standards have like high standards where they, things that you want to meet, because overall it makes the landscape much more healthier and decreases a lot of pest problems. But there are just some things that come through where, unfortunately, you might have to fall back on, a synthetic chemical.
Yeah, the ash borer is a good example. In fact, I think someone on the one either the last or two exams ago used that very example from his own practice as an urban forester. And it's something that you have to treat in a confined space like that. You can't just kind of let a pest wreak havoc in such a sort of highly visible space as an urban area. And so he described, that as this is, a problem that needed treating that couldn't be done in an organic way. And then the ongoing care and maintenance really becomes more about IPM and monitoring and hoping to keep the pest away.
And my
Something.
background's in pest management, but I think the what I took away most from, like, not only the standards, because my memory's pretty bad, but I think I actually came to some of those meetings, like, didn't stay for the whole thing, but I was there when they started to put them together, and went to some of the earlier did some of the earlier trainings. But just the importance of soil health for overall plant health, because this started in 99, 2000, and my professional career started in 94. So that was still relatively early in my career. But just to learn about the importance of soil health was a great takeaway for me from being involved with this years ago.
Yeah, there's another aspect of the standards, and I don't know back this goes, but that I found just unique and really important, which is in the kind of intro, it lays out the core principles of this style of management and outlines these values of health, ecology, care, and fairness as the basis for a lot of these practices. And the one that kind of sticks out to me as, I mean, and the standards include a lot of detail about the actual practices and the products and practices that you mentioned are preferred and allowed and prohibited and things like that. But the one that stuck out to me was the fairness one, because it's kind of it goes beyond the plant care level of this and extends it to the people who are doing this work, and talks about adequately compensating employees and providing safe working conditions and decreasing noise pollution and paying vendors on time and treating clients with respect. And I don't know if that is part of the organic agriculture standards, if that like element of like the people element is kind of codified in those standards for agriculture, and I might be wrong on that, but that's always something that I have thought of as kind of a missing piece, is like we need to also talk about how to treat these people well who are out there doing the work. And so I just wanted to mention that. I think that's really I don't know if that was something that was in there from the start, or if that was one of the things that's been added over time as sort of the conversation around organic practices has evolved. But certainly you hear more these days, it seems, about labor and worker protections and fair pay and things like that. But yeah, I just wanted to point that out as something that seems like a really important piece of this.
That's a really great point. I'm really glad you brought that up. That is something that was in the standards from the very beginning, and it's one of the elements that I find the most valuable and really shows that sort of connecting of the science and a set of values. And so the National Organic Program doesn't necessarily have that, right? Because it's not a, it's a government program. The values are maybe not so front and center. There are obviously every policy is has values behind it. They're just not always stated quite so specifically. And it's one of the things that really, for me, I found really appealing about this program and about the training that it offered. And you think about so my background before I started working in landscape design and here at the Organic Landcare Program, I did a lot of work on economic self-sufficiency for low-income families. And so this notion of paying a fair wage, what is a fair wage, what kind of work provides dignity and the chance for dignity to people was is really important to me. And working with a lot of landscape laborers who are by and large the hardest working people I've ever met, and you see how important it is for people who have the power to shape somebody else's working life to be really thoughtful and careful about that. And outside of the landscape space, you think about, you know, there's now there are B Corps and the ideas of a triple bottom line. And so there's a lot of, I think, again, this is a place where the standards and the Organic Landcare Program were really ahead of their time. And so we're really, I think, really proud of that coming into the 25th year, thinking about, kind of where to go from there.
And I think in the green industry, where there is a, high turnover employees, taking that fairness and, when you invest your employees with, a good salary, professional development opportunities, that they're going to become invested in the company and give more, whatever that means, as far as what their job is, and have a greater tendency to stay and want to work for you long time. Whereas if you just, kind of paying them and they're just replaceable, you're not going to get the effort and they will leave. So I think it's a really important part of that, as Margaret said.
I also wanted to ask about, and our main focus on this podcast is really the industry, but I know that we do have listeners who are master gardeners or homeowners, or we get a lot of questions as extension educators from homeowners associations. We actually talked about this at our last team meeting. Like, there's been an uptick in HOAs reaching out, and it's kind of this in between of, they're homeowners, but they're also kind of dealing in a commercial landscape kind of setting because there's contracted landscapers and there's common properties that have to look a certain way. And so I kind of wondered, like what resources are out there for folks who are not in the industry but who care deeply about this or are interested in this, and how can they connect with someone who's been accredited, and how can they kind of use some of these tools if they are part of an HOA that's trying to lower their, inputs or pesticide usage or something? How do they develop the communication skills to be able to talk to their landscaper or find a landscaping company that is more aligned with their values? Like, are there resources available for homeowners and property owners?
Yeah, another really good question. In the last course that we ran, we actually had a participant who is the head of her landscape committee. I believe that was at a homeowners association, who had a background in botany and science and was interested in learning enough to be able to help direct this large property with sensitive, adjacent to very sensitive areas, and which I thought was great. And I know we have had a number of other people sort of similarly situated who have taken the course from that perspective. So not so much as professionals, but as people who are still sort of somewhat charged with managing a landscape. As far as other resources, our website at organiclandcare.net does have an organic land care guide, which is a map that people can search for providers who are accredited. I have to warn that the map, because the website is brand new as of 2 weeks ago, the map is still being populated with our accredited folks. So it looks a little sparse right now, but it's getting denser by the day. It's something that I would love to be able to do more of, to be able to provide more resources to homeowners and in particular people, sort of charged with these bigger landscapes. It's a little bit outside the brief of our program. So really what we work on is connecting people to the professionals.
You have like the, I think the standards, and I think there's like a homeowner publication. Aren't those available on the NOFA site?
They
Like
are.
PDF.
We have a nice sort of getting started with organic section on our website. There's an introduction to organic lawns and yards, which is a, really a lovely publication, and that can be really handy for a lot of people. We have a couple of pages on the website that are in development right now, a sort of finding organic products page and our soil testing and soil health page, which our website was very old. And so when we were making a new website, we had to really kind of do all new content. And those two pages, we just hadn't had a chance to fact check before we put the site up. So those resources are available on our website. And we are, really kind of working hard to market the program and the professionals who are accredited by us out to the broader public. And that's something that is probably in our next set of goals, updating the standards, doing more homeowner outreach, not necessarily homeowner education, but connecting them to professionals. And probably kind of bumping up our language a little bit on why it's important to hire an organic land care company.
So as we're kind of nearing the end of our conversation, I'm wondering about the future. You've mentioned a couple of aspects that you're interested in exploring for future sets of these standards. And I kind of wonder for somebody who is considering either hiring an organic land care company or becoming accredited, do you have a sense of what the outlook is for this industry? Like, has it become more profitable? Is there increased consumer demand? Because I think from our perspective, it seems like more and more people are interested in electric equipment and lower inputs, smarter water usage, native plants, but it's hard to tell, what the broad trends are. But do you have an idea of kind of where this sector is going in the future?
I mean, to me, and this is sadly only anecdotal, but I feel like it's growing by leaps and bounds. I think if you can measure by the sort of public discourse and how commonplace it is to hear people talk about sustainable practices, and obviously native plants are an introduction for a lot of people to thinking about this. There's so much more discussion about the dangers of pesticides and chemicals in plastics, things that weren't really being talked about in the same way a long time ago. So Unfortunately, we don't have the research that can put hard numbers on any of this. But I think there's no doubt that this is the direction that the industry is moving in and should be moving in, both in terms of what homeowners want, but in terms of what the providers want as well. They don't want to be using, some of them do. A lot of them don't want to be using chemicals. They want to be, people get into this because they are, fundamentally interested in the living, growing world. And as people learn more and more about it, people don't want to be polluting it with their work.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, Jennifer, this was so fun to talk to you and so informative. We always end our interviews in the same way. So we like to ask our guests what they like to do when they're not working. So what do you on your days off?
Well, a little bit of a busman's holiday because I really like to garden. I don't have a beautiful garden now. I relocated from New York City a couple of years ago, and I miss my New York City garden. I have more space here, but I haven't developed my garden. And I also have, but on the other hand, I've been doing a lot of hiking, which is great. West Rock Ridge State Park is near my house, and so I've been hanging out there a lot, and some sailing and skiing. So lots of outdoor stuff.
Oh, very cool. Hard to go skiing in New York City.
Harder to get there for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Well, that's great to hear. Hopefully you have some fun things planned for the weekend ahead. And again, thank you for being part of the podcast and spending your afternoon talking about this program with us.
Oh, thanks very much for having me. I was really glad to be here.
Yes, thank you very much.
All right, take care.
All right, bye.